Mary Roach, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
You know, you've written about cadavers in your book, Stiff, space travel and packing for Mars, sex in your book, Bonk. What made you decide to focus on the alimentary canal of all things?
Oh, it's just such a Mary Roach place to spend time. It seemed completely fitting. I tend to cover the human body in various formats and contexts, and the alimentary canal, the food chute, it's kind of an odd place in that it's almost more like the outside of the body. I mean, it's all bacteria and smelly things in there. We're kind of like donuts. There's this, the sterile part with all the important stuff. And then there's that tube where all manner of scary, gross things go on. So it appealed to me in that way. It's sort of like a foreign planet inside us.
Well, you say in the introduction, authors have profiled the brain and the heart and the eyes and the skin and the penis and the female geography, even the hair, but never the gut. The pie hole and the feed chute are mine, and you just called it the feed chute there, and it is something that people don't tend to dwell much on.
No, we tend to turn away from the bodily processes. I think we tend to think of ourselves as floating minds or personalities, and we don't really like to be reminded that we are just another creature full of functioning squishy guts and things going on. I think it's something I think it reminds us in a way of our mortality, and it's something we just, until something goes wrong, really, you don't think about it. So I'm now making people think about that. And it's also because it's a taboo topic, I think a lot of this is just a lot of basic, fascinating information that people might not No, because they tend to not spend a lot of time thinking about it until I came along.
Well, you go back and delve into the mysteries of the alimentary canal through the centuries, and this is something that scientists have been looking at and wondering about and studying for quite some time. You talk about William Beaumont and Alexis San Martin, the Voyager with a hole in his stomach, and the experiments they did back in the early 1800s, trying to figure out what happens when you do stuff your pie hole there.
Yeah, that was a fascinating story. Alexis St. Martin was a voyageur, worked for a fur company, and shotgun shot left a hole in his stomach that didn't heal up. And the doctor who treated him realized he could actually, with a light source, look inside this guy's stomach and see what was going on. And he thought, aha, here is a ticket to my fame and fortune as a pioneer in physiological research. And he had this little mesh bag, a silk bag on a string, and he would put different foods in, and, sometimes in a chunk, sometimes cooked, sometimes raw, sometimes vegetable, sometimes bread. And he'd put it in the stomach, and this guy, Alexis Saint Martin, as you so lovelily pronounced it, a lot of people go Saint Martin,
yes.
Saint Martin. Anyway, he would go about his chores, because he was hired as a houseboy for the doctor, and so he'd go about his chores with this bag in his stomach with a string hanging out, and then every few hours, Beaumont would have him come over, back into the lab area and pull it back out and make some notes and then put it back in, and the lad would go about his business around the house, and these two carried on these experiments over a span of almost 30 years, and Beaumont finally ended up publishing a book, Experiments and Observations in the Gastric Juices, which he was quite convinced would be a bestseller, and was not, but did earn him a place in the halls of medical physiological research history. He's quite revered. I mean, if you go to medical school, you will hear the story of Beaumont and St. Martin. Sadly, St. Martin was illiterate, so we don't have his journals and diaries. I would love to know what he made of this whole business, this man who seemed so obsessed with his stomach and all of the many strange things that he was asked to do. So we'll never really know exactly. St. Martin was paid, St. Martin, paid for his contributions, but he would get fed up and take off, and Beaumont would fetch somebody to offer him more money, and I'll pay for your family to come back. Please come back. Please, I need you. So they had this kind of mutual dependency over the years, all based on this hole in St. Martin's stomach.
Well, you talk about how Beaumont wanted to take him on tour to Europe as you say in the book, as his PowerPoint presentation. He needed a little bit of an example of what he was doing.
Yeah, he was kind of a almost like a sideshow act. He was, you know, and here my lovely assistant with the hole in his side. I mean, it was certainly it would have been of interest to the people coming to his lectures, but there was still a little bit of the freak show element, I think.
I'm speaking with best-selling author Mary Roach, the author of the book Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, available where books are sold. And Mary, I know from speaking with you about your former books, like Packing for Mars, that you do a lot of research, and it's obvious in this book that you spent a lot of time going around and doing research. Though it wasn't research that sounded like it was very much fun. I mean, in Packing for Mars, you get to go experience weightlessness on that airplane that NASA calls the Vomit Comet. You get to involve yourself in other activities that sounded like fun. But as I was reading Gulp, there were things that you were doing in the research that I don't know that they were very much fun at all. Why do you subject yourself to some of this stuff?
You must be thinking of the colonoscopy without drugs. Is that
well, among other things, yes.
I did that for two. Well, I need, you know, it's time to have a colonoscopy. And I thought, how many chances do you have to see the inside of your own intestinal tract? And I thought, I really need to be awake for this. And the other thing I will say is that it is not as unbearable as people make it out to be. It is uncomfortable periodically, kind of when they go around the corners, because the colon is it feels pain through stretch receptors. You could cut it or burn it, and you won't feel it. But when you stretch it, you do feel that. So when they go around a corner or a kink, it does hurt. But it was kind of an amazing thing to see. You know, you're seeing there's the door between my large intestine and my small intestine, and there's my appendix as seen from the inside. I mean, that was just kind of cool. It was very cool. So that was the most, I'm not sure what you're thinking of for the, perhaps I've blocked it from my mind, what other unpleasant experience, but all of it was, you know, like with Stiff, the cadaver book, the first book, I tend to, my curiosity kind of outweighs any discomfort or disgust, because it's I'm fascinated by what I'm learning, and this was, you know, this book was no exception.
Well, and it stretches. You have arranged Gulp to follow the alimentary canal from the lips, if you may, all the way down to the end when it goes out.
Nose to tail.
Yes, nose to tail, and it's quite a voyage as you go along. I found it very interesting to learn a lot of, about the digestive system that, again, we just take for granted and don't stop and think about it. And that goes back to my original question as to, you know, why did you decide the alimentary canal was where you wanted to go on vacation?
Well, it was part of it was that I had there were a couple of things that I wanted to play around with that was material I'd come across in other projects. And one of them, I had done an article about flatulence, and I'd been at the Beano Company, and when they were doing a study, and I actually volunteered as a gas producer in the study. They give you a pint of beans and set you up with a Mylar bag to inflate. And I hadn't been able to really do that visit justice in the article that I had done. So that was something I wanted to further investigate, because the creativity that has been applied to the study of intestinal gas, not only its odor, but its volume, its flammability, there's a tremendous amount of really unusual and hilarious, occasionally, research that I wanted to explore. And then I thought, well, am I going to write a whole book about gas and what makes sense to, how could we make this a little broader? And of course, you know, I thought, why not the whole food chute? Why not the entire 9 yards? It is actually about 9 yards. So that was part of it, that I'd had these a couple of chunks of research I hadn't been able to, to do justice to in shorter pieces.
Well, it's, we're giggling along the way here, and I have to say, Well, there were many parts of your book, Gulp, that grossed me out. I was laughing quite a bit, too. And I was trying to decide, so are you a science writer or a comedian, Mary? Because some of these lines are just precious. I mean, the humor about when you called up, who was it, the Soap and Detergent Association were asking some questions there. And yeah. the PR person connected you up with a Dr. Spitz because you were talking about saliva and wanted to find it. And when that guy didn't work out, he hooked you up with somebody named Grime.
And that's right, Dr. Keith Grime. And the most amazing thing is that in both cases, the PR guy showed no glee whatsoever. I was curious about saliva has these enzymes that break down foods, and it's the same enzymes they put in laundry detergent. And I thought, well, who had that bright idea? And I called the Soap and Detergent Association, and the guy goes, oh, I'll put you in touch with Dr. Luis Spitz. And I'm like, wait, rewind the tape here. Did you just say Dr. Spitz? You know, he's like, yeah. Uh-huh. And then the guy who did my colonoscopy, this is true. And this is not, this is, his name is Dr. Turdeman. Jonathan Turdeman, a fine gastroenterologist, and that's his name. And I wasn't looking for these things. They just kept popping up all through the book.
Oh, they are. Some of those notes, that you follow as asides, and where things are ironic and the irony is lost on the subjects. I wanted to ask you about saliva. You started talking about spit, and you said saliva used to get stains out. So should you spit on your shirt? And the fellow you're talking to said, well, no, I carry around a Tide pen in my pocket for stains. But I was just amazed at what saliva does. I mean, you don't think about it when you spit, you don't think about it when you swallow, but saliva is quite a wondrous material.
Yeah, I came away with a lot of respect for my own spit. People think it just moistens their food, and it does that, and you definitely need that. You couldn't eat a cracker if you couldn't stick together the particles into a bolus, as they say.
Yes.
But it also protects your teeth, because anytime you drink anything that's acid, like wine, fruit juice, cola, that's all in the acid pH range, and that will very quickly dissolve your tooth enamel. So, and you can do a little experiment. If you take a sip of wine, you will actually feel saliva rushing in like the cavalry to dilute the acid to keep your enamel from dissolving. It's a pretty impressive, and it's like instant when you drink something that's acid, just sort of gush of saliva. And it's also, saliva's also got antibacterial components, antiviral components. It speeds healing. When you cut yourself and you go, you, what do? You put your finger in your mouth and you suck off the blood, and you're getting saliva. And saliva has bacteria. That's the most amazing thing about it. It's, your mouth is full of bacteria, but saliva is has these components that keep it from being a highly infective substance. It's pretty amazing stuff.
And surprising, too, that just like fingerprints, saliva is different from individual to individual.
Some people, yes, the mineral content is different. I said to the researcher, I said, whoa, so that would be, if you took people's saliva, the different mineral content, it would almost be like different mineral waters from different springs, and you could do a taste test. And she said, yeah, someone could if someone wanted to. But yeah, and some people have naturally saltier saliva, and those people may be less sensitive to salt in their food. That was kind of interesting.
Well, and part of the chapter talking about saliva, you're in Holland talking to the researcher about spit, but you also there in Holland visited Food Valley, sort of the Silicon Valley of food engineering. Share a little about what that Food Valley is like, and what the restaurant of the future is really like.
Yeah, Food Valley. There are a lot of food scientists, food physicists, people who can tell you the exact meters per second with which a crack propagates in a chip. I mean, the decibel level, the optimal decibel level for a person crunching a piece of snack food. The restaurant of the future is this cafeteria. Nice cafeteria. This is Europe, remember. It's a cafeteria, and it's set up with all these software that can read people's emotions. So when so they can, the researchers can study people's decision-making process and whether, you know, how long do they linger at, say, the soup stand, and if they change the lighting and make it a little more pink, does that make people more likely to purchase the thing that's being displayed? If they're given the opportunity to cut their own bread, are they more likely to buy bread than whether, you know, if it's been sliced already? So there's people who are observing, and there's also software that's automatically taking data. So it's kind of the NSA of cafeterias. And I spent a little time there, and I have to say the food is, yeah.
Well, I thought it was telling that a lot of the researchers say they hadn't eaten there. They just worked there, and they, well, at least the one
that's
you said.
Right. Kept saying, oh, well, we could meet for lunch at the restaurant of the future, and they would go, okay, I've never eaten there, but all right.
Well, among the things I found fun, too, was the explanation of why we enjoy crunchy food so much. Why do we enjoy crunchy food?
Well, crisp food and crunchy food in nature, it's fresh food. Like a crisp apple or a piece of celery. This is a food. If it's crisp and crunchy, it's got a lot of nutritional value. It's not rotten. Something that's mushy in nature could signify that it's past its date, that it's mushy. It might be full of bacteria. It might be a dangerous thing to eat. So we tend to like crunchy and stay away from mushy, unless we know that, you know, mushy, you know, okay, this is my grandmother's meatloaf and it's not going to kill me. So, but anyway, that's sort of the thinking evolutionarily, that's what's going on. And then the snack food industry has capitalized on that natural liking for crisp and crunch and has made these products that, you know, a lot of work has gone into the engineering of exactly how loud, how long, how many little, it's actually little tiny bubbles of air that are bursting. You know, and if in a piece of fruit, you have little cells with liquid in them that's bursting. And in a snack food, it's little air bubbles. And when you hear a crack, it's actually hundreds of tiny little air bubbles bursting. It's kind of like a bubble pack. It's enough of them to make an audible sound in your mouth. In some cases, it's what you're hearing is a small sonic boom, because the crack is traveling at the speed of sound. They actually measured this. So anyway, that's a little bit of crispy and crunchy, and why we seem to like it, and why there are so many products on the market.
Mary Roach, the author of Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, talking here on Cincinnati Edition. And I found it very interesting where you said we taste with our nose and eat with our ears, and that's kind of why we like the crunchy parts, too.
Yeah, that's right. We taste with our nose is just a reference to when somebody says flavor, say the flavor of chocolate. If you take away sweet, which is happening on the tongue, and a little bit of bitter on the tongue, there's a lot of aromatic, like gases that are being released into the nose that are contributing the rest of the flavor experience. So, you know, wine, a lot of all those wonderful adjectives that people talk about, you know, citrus and melon and berry, and all of that is these gases wafting up in the mouth. And as you warm the food or the wine, they're released, more of them are released, and they go up into the nose. And we think of it as a tongue phenomenon, but a lot of that, 80% of it, is going on in the nose.
I, you know, mentioned how parts of this were kind of gross, and I was wondering, you know, was there any point while you were researching your book Gulp that you thought you might have been going a little overboard when it came to the gross? I mean, after all, you know, everything from tasting olive oil to what do they call it, the Bristol stool scale that allows you to look at stools
yes.
and describe them much like you would describe a wine, if you may?
You know, there were a couple of the saliva, unstimulated saliva, not the kind you produce when you chew, which is essentially like water, basically, with some other little dashes of minerals and other components. But the kind of background, the background saliva that is kind of keeping your tissues moist and is always being generated in smaller amounts, that's some really, it's like we in the lab, the researcher and I, generated some, and we had she took a little like a pipette, and she sort of pulled it away from the saliva and this mucoid strand. And she's, of course, going, the mucoid, there's chains of, I forget what the chains, not fatty acids, but there's like these chains of these molecules all that, that's why it's holding together, and you have this mucus strand. And I'm like, really? Yeah. I take your word for it. Can we not do that again?
Well, you said you were looking out the window where it was snowing, and you were saying, oh, that's beautiful. And she said, yes, indeed it is. And she wasn't talking about the snow. She was talking about the spit.
She was talking about the spit, yes. Yeah. So, and I think my afternoon at Avenal State Prison for the rectum chapter, which we probably don't want to get into here, that was an unusual afternoon. the talking with the guy who smuggles things in and out of the prison that way. But that's not gross. That's just unusual.
Very unusual. Well, many unusual things in your book, Gulp. Thank you for bringing many of them to light. The only warning for readers I was would have is you shouldn't probably read this while you're eating. There was one time I tried, and it just didn't work well, Mary, at all. So,
especially the oral processing chapter.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you for your time today. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Mary Roach, author of Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. You can learn more about Mary and her work and the book at our website, wvxu.org. Gulp, available where books are sold. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Mark Purcell.